Welcome to the Stop Ruining My Childhood podcast.
A sometimes nostalgic, sometimes cynical look back at pop culture.
Join us as we revisit movies, cartoons, and live-action TV of the 80s and 90s and ask the question,
does this hold up, or did I just ruin my childhood?
My name is Megan.
And my name is Steve. Actually, not. It's Tim.
Tim is my brother, and you were on our 50th show.
Also known as the best special and best podcast that you've done so far.
Yeah, that sounds about right. The best one. We had people like, where is Tim? We need Tim to come back. So we, as I said, a couple weeks ago, we went on hiatus for a bit because Steve and I both got second jobs. Steve's quite still a bit busy. And so Tim agreed to come in the podcast studio, also known as the spare room. Mm-hmm. And record this episode with us. So today,
color commentary.
Today we are talking about
Gremlins.
Technically a Christmas movie.
That was released in the summer, so...
Yeah, so it's a little...
It's even more confusing.
A bit confusing. So if you haven't been with us before, we're going to get into our snack first and talk about memories and fun facts, and then we'll review the snack 1 out of 5. We are doing pumpkins today for Halloween. Then we're going to do a summary of the movie real quick. We'll give some history and fun facts. Then we'll talk about our memories. We'll do a full review and recap. So that is our game plan.
Good game plan.
All right. So tell us what our snack is today, Tim.
The snack is Snapple.
Snapple. Snapple has an interesting history. You want to take some while I talk about it?
Sure.
I got for us today peach tea Snapple, which I don't think of as like classic Snapple.
Yeah, I think you dropped the ball just a little bit on this one.
I think of classic Snapple as like strawberry kiwi in a glass
bottle. Or apple. Yeah, strawberry kiwi or apple.
Apple.
It's all right,
though. Apple Snapple.
They don't make... It's tough to find the more classic Snapple now. They have the iced tea one that you got.
Yeah, so here's basically what happened. Tim picked this because he liked the Snapple lady.
Who doesn't?
Which we'll talk about her in a minute. But basically,
she was the best.
She was really, it was so, those commercials were just so fun and everybody loved her. But this actually started with three friends, two guys who were doing window washing and their friend who ran a health food store. They were best friends and one of them was a brother-in-law. And they started talking about what the health food store didn't have, and it didn't have juice. Like, people were super into juicing, but they didn't have any, like, good juice. I guess they didn't want juicy juice.
This was before Jamba Juice.
I guess, yeah.
But was it before Orange Julius, though?
I don't know. No, I don't think so.
But that's not really... Is this a health food, though?
It started out as a health food. It's not. It's okay. Not. But it started out that way. So what happened is they wanted initially to do a carbonated apple juice, which I guess would be like sparkling cider, sort of. Yeah. But they didn't know how to bottle it. And so they went to bottle it and all the caps popped right off and it over fermented and like caps and bottles were exploding everywhere, which I think is hilarious. But from that, they took Snappy Apple and created the company name Snapple.
What about the Snapple lady? Can we get to that, though?
Yeah. So they got some. So they were doing this product. It was going pretty well locally. They got funding from a company that bought 70% interest and gave them millions of dollars. And salary.
That's when they went national.
Then they went national.
I didn't even know what Snapple was until all of a sudden these commercials were on like every day.
Yeah. So they go national. Yeah. And what happens in 92 is before the Snapple lady, they had two famous people selling their drinks.
Oh, really?
And basically they realized how big radio was. And they had Rush Limbaugh for the conservatives and Howard Stern for the liberals. And they advertised on their networks.
Oh, wow.
They got a ton of people started buying it. And then they started doing these national commercials with the Snapple lady, Wendy Kaufman.
She actually became one of Howard Stern's Brat Pack.
Along, no, she
didn't. Along with Beetlejuice. And,
No. But she was a lady who actually worked for the company. And she had been...
Oh, that's right.
Answered some fans.
Is that true, though? Or is that part... I didn't know if that was part of the shtick.
Like no, she was invited on Oprah.
That's right. She would answer all the messages, and then they thought, well, what if we just put her in charge of the ad.
Yeah, that's basically what happened. Yeah. And we're going to put an ad in here. At our ad break, we'll put an ad for Snapple in there with the Snapple lady talking.
So people would write in. Why, I don't know, but they would write in to Snapple.
Listen, they really liked
talking Snapple. About how much they loved it and had questions for her.
Well, I will say this. For people like me, I don't drink pop. I don't drink coffee. So when Snapple came out, I did kind of buy it for a bit.
And you felt the urge to write in to no, I didn't. And profess your love.
But I was also not like 7 years old. But she had an interesting story. She was she struggled with addiction for 10 years and then she got clean and sober, got a job at this up and coming company. And people were writing in and she had written to Greg Brady as a fan when she was a little kid and nobody ever answered her. So she was like, these kids should get answers. And then somebody found out about it and put her on TV.
That's pretty
amazing. And then, in 1995, the company was bought for $1 billion, which was way over what it was market value was, by Quaker Oats. And Quaker Oats also owned Gatorade at the time. Mm-hmm. So they thought it would be a good companion, and they were trying to sell it like Gatorade. But here's the problem. Snapple was known for some fruit juices, but also for its teas. Arizona tea started to come up. Lipton was doing more. Pepsi and Coke were trying to do like competing products in their lines. So Snapple had already kind of fallen down a little bit. It was like number one in those categories for a while, and then it fell down. And so
the facts on the backside of the cap were getting less and less interesting.
Too. Yeah, do we have a fact today? Because that was my other
thing. They don't do that on no, that. You don't. Have the big bottle. You got to buy the individual bottle.
They didn't have any. So
I don't know. Do they still even do the facts? I'm not sure.
I don't. Yeah, they do. But
so this company being bought, I thought the Snapple lady was the late 90s.
No.
Was she mid-90s?
And okay. Quaker Company, basically, they tried to sell it in grocery stores. Now they switched over to plastic, but it's not owned by Quaker anymore. Yeah. But they basically ran the brand into the ground. They got rid of the Snapple lady, which everybody hated, that decision. And then they made bad decisions. They tried to put it in like grocery stores, and it had been more of like a convenience store and like movie theaters and places like that. So,
I mean, it's still around, so it's still doing some.
Yeah, it was sold off by Quaker though for $300,000, and they paid one.
Really?
Yeah, and they no 300. Sorry, 300 million.
Oh my God, that's a big difference. I was like, they bought it for $1 billion, and they sold it for.
Sold it for 300 million, but that's it's almost you know.
Yeah, that's still
it's a huge loss, right? And then it went to Schweppes for a while, and then it got put under with Dr. Pepper, and now it's like part of Keurig, which I don't understand at all.
I don't understand. Yeah,
and Dr. It's in a Pepper, bottle.
7 Up, whatever. They always seem to acquire and then lose.
Yeah,
whoever they're owned by seems to always be changing hands. They're like a middleman.
I don't know. This is our peach tea. I'm glad that it's still around. They rehired the Snapple lady. She does like promotional events. Yeah. She's not on TV, but she does promotional events.
She's still around.
Yeah. Good for her.
She has type 2 diabetes from the Snapple that she drank.
It's a lot of sugar in this.
I'm just kidding.
I smell the peach more than I taste the peach. It has a weird aftertaste in my mouth. It's not bad drinking it, but then it leaves like a film or something.
You know what I think it is? And you alluded to this. Now they sell it in these plastic. You got to have the real glass, the traditional Snapple glass.
Yeah.
And they don't even have that in the convenience stores. I don't see it. They all transition to plastic.
Yeah, I don't think it has the same taste.
Cheaper for them or something.
It's kind of like, I feel like about milk. When you put milk in a plastic container as opposed to the carton, cardboard, it has a different flavor.
For sure.
Yeah. So we are rating out of 1 out of 5 pumpkins.
Oh, okay.
What are you going to give this 1 out of 5?
In terms of like overall?
Overall score.
Compared to other things or just on its own merits?
Does it hold up to what you remember as a child?
Well, I'm a little disappointed again because it's not my favorite flavor of Snapple and it's not in the glass.
I had to go to like 4 stores to even
I'll give it 3 pumpkins. Yeah, it's still Snapple. I like Snapple.
That's about where I am too. Am I going to buy this again? Probably not. Steve likes it, so he'll probably finish it up, but I don't, it's the weird aftertaste.
Well, kiwi strawberry, I mean, that's the classic, right?
Yeah.
Or apple, Snapple apple.
We usually talk about our memories, too. My memories are that this was very popular my last couple years of high school, which are, by the way, also the only 2 years of my life that I drank alcohol. The last year of high school, the first year of college. So people would fill...
Spiking your Snapple.
They would spike their Snapple and bring it to school. Yeah. Good. And drink. You know how the stage, you could get onto the stage at school from the back? People would hang out backstage and drink spiked Snapple and pretend to be cool. I don't know.
Oh, they didn't need to pretend. They had Snapple. They were...
So that's like my, that's my little memory of Snapple is like just drinking it with vodka in it, the strawberry kiwi.
Well, I don't have that memory, but I just, Dennis and Karen, I think they went on a binge of they would always buy the Snapple.
Those are our parents.
When it became super popular,
So. Our dad gets on kicks of stuff. Yeah. He bought us for 4 years, no other kind of ice cream except the chocolate chip cookie dough.
It was cookie dough ice cream. When cookie dough ice cream was invented.
Yeah.
He single-handedly kept whoever was in business for that flavor. But anyway. Yeah.
And then he went on a Snapple kick after that.
Yeah, the Snapple.
All right. So, Tim. Three pumpkins out of five. That's okay. It's a medium score.
What the heck is your score?
That's total.
Oh, you don't give a score?
I said my score and then I averaged them. You didn't get that part?
What was your score?
I'm not editing this out. I'm leaving this in. Because I said I'm going to give it a 3 also.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear you. Sorry.
That's okay. All right. So we're talking about Gremlins. If someone had never seen this show before, in a quick minute, tell what the movie's about.
The 1 minute synopsis.
Yeah. The overview, if you will.
Yeah, the movie, directed by Joe Dante, who has his own particular style, written by Chris Columbus, who also has his own particular style, and then produced, by Steven Spielberg. Overall, it's kind of a horror movie, but not really. It's kind of more of a whimsical movie that kind of plays on different things and takes a look at... It's sort of like making dark humor jokes throughout the process, and kind of poking fun at certain elements of other movies. But overall, the plot of the movie, is Billy, I think his name is, receives a Christmas gift of a cute little furball type of animal. And the animal, unfortunately, can also turn into this sort of vicious monster by a process which we'll talk about. And then that monster could also multiply and... That's what happens in the movie and starts wreaking havoc on the local town until everyone's able to sort of get things under control and combat these gremlins. So that's kind of the gist of the movie overall. And throughout, there's a bunch of interesting parts, which we can talk about. But
yeah, we'll get into our full review and recap. Like you said, this is a horror comedy.
Yeah, horror
and
comedy.
It's written by Christopher Columbus. And it was actually his first, it was a spec script. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
So if you don't know what it is, for people out there listening.
I'm lying. I have actually no clue what that means. But I just wanted to sound like I knew.
Script is a speculative script. It's unsolicited. Uh-huh. So there's no agent. It's like you're shopping around to show that you can write a script. And so he didn't really expect this ever to be produced. And you do that sometimes. A lot of times people will do hey, I want to be a TV writer. Here's some spec scripts. I wrote an episode of Star Trek, or I wrote an episode of, I don't know, you do one of Golden Girls at this point in time or whatever. People would maybe hire you on as a writer, or they'd say, hey, we have this other project we want you to write. So he was inspired by, he had a crappy apartment, and when he turned off the lights at night, he could hear all the mice rambling around, which I think is even more scary than most of this movie, and creeps me right the heck out. Yeah. And so he started thinking, what if there was a thing that, hated the light, or was hurt by the light, and it came out at night, right? So he came up with this idea of maybe something like a goblin. Goblins are European folklore, right? They're little Hobgoblins is another name for them. They're like little malicious little fairies. Mm-hmm. And in lore, they do things like bang pots and pans.
Yeah, there are some kind of like fairy tale elements to this movie. And it draws on different things like that. And I don't know how much of that it's Chris Columbus or Joe Dante. Maybe it's a mixture of both. Kind of interesting.
Well, like you said, it's whimsical, right? And yeah. I think that's where that element comes in. But the making of this is kind of interesting. They use the same set as Back to the Future, the same Universal Studios backlot and part of the town that it was done in, which if you've seen Back to the Future a ton of times, you can kind of tell. There's no CGI.
Who hasn't seen Back to the Future?
I know.
If you have TBS and you were alive in the late 90s.
Well, like you can see.
Literally on every day. They're like, what are we learning today? Let's throw Back to the Future on.
You can see like the school from Back to the Future, the movie theater, the main road that a lot of this is on. Yeah.
It's like, it wasn't so obvious to me, but when you pointed it out, it was. You know, it kind of looks familiar. Like, they've redone it to a certain extent, obviously.
Yeah. And there's no CGI, so they're all, like, these puppets and costumes.
That I like. Sick of the CGI.
They were really expensive, too.
Really?
Apparently, the production, like, the Universal Studios would check the cars of people as they were leaving to make sure they weren't, like, smuggling stuff out. Because they were, like, $30,000, some of them.
That could have been dangerous, too, because if they're exposed to water.
I know. Then you got them all over the place.
But I heard that the whole movie was made for about, what, $11 million or something?
Something
like that. Spielberg thought it was a little bit more than he wanted, but still fairly cheap for the time, I think. But
yeah, and they were thinking about Tim Burton for a director.
Oh, that would have made some sense, but then it definitely would have had his style, which is a totally different type of style.
It would have been a totally different movie.
Yeah, a totally different
movie. But he hadn't done any feature films yet, so they decided not to go with him. And
his movies aren't so comical, really.
Yeah.
Like, well, Joe Dante has this kind of like humorous element to his horror comedy type.
Yeah, and that's a good point because that brings me to my next fun fact that this was supposed to be a lot darker. Like originally, Gizmo and Stripe is the gremlin. Gizmo is the cute little furry Mowgli, and they were supposed to be the same character. And Steven Spielberg was like, it makes more sense if this is like a family movie, a PG movie at the time, which we'll get into that in a minute. That they split them and have it be a good guy and a bad guy. Mm-hmm. He thought that would be easier. It was way darker and way more horror. Like at one point, they were going to cut somebody's head off. At another point, they were going to kill the dog. Like there is mayhem and people do die, but their deaths are mostly off screen. Right.
It's tough to look at it through the lens of like everything nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking back on it and comparing it to what we see now. It feels pretty tame to me, but I think I could see maybe back in 1984. And I think the way they marketed it too, right? They kind of marketed it all focused on, oh, it's just a happy little furball. And like, they didn't really push, or you didn't even really know what the gremlin looked like.
Right. And so what happened then is that a bunch of parents took their kids to this.
Right. Yeah.
This movie and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and Poltergeist that Steve and I just reviewed, all of these were things that parents super complained about, and they were all PG. Yeah. And this kind of got pushed through the PG-13 rating came about in part because of
this movie. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I find interesting because compared to what we saw in Poltergeist, like, it's nothing compared to some of the crap that goes on in that movie.
Yeah.
Famous actors voiced some of the roles. We have Frank Welker and Fred Jones voicing the gremlins. He did the voice in Scooby-Doo. Michael Winslow, who did Police Academy, he makes all the noises. He did some of those too. But Gizmo was voiced by Howie Mandel,
who did
Bobby's World. And
I mean, really, did it need to be voiced by anyone famous? I don't know how famous was Howie Mandel in 1984. Maybe he was just getting started.
I think he was just getting started because he would have been a stand-up at that point. But not like probably not a very.
You could have gotten anyone to voice Gizmo. This really just kind of says little things here.
But he says bright light.
Yeah.
And bye, Billy. So cute.
It's kind of funny. Just like in the, was it Guardians of the Galaxy? Don't they have someone really famous doing Groot? I forget who it is. But
yeah, it's.
I'm like, why did they need a really famous, or it's, what's his face? Is it Bradley Cooper?
Doesn't no, Bradley do Cooper does the raccoon.
Oh, you're right. Sorry. Yeah,
that's no, it's right. Okay. Yeah. You're right, though. It is somebody famous. It's somebody famous. Vin Diesel.
Yeah. Why does Vin Diesel need to be hired?
Dude, I don't know.
You can get anyone. All right.
Anyway. I wonder that, too.
Anyway, off topic.
Gremlins was the last movie shot on a particular film stock that had been popular at the time. Eastman Color 125T. I don't know. It was discontinued right after shooting was over. Wow. So it's
really
the last
thing. Into this research.
I really did, yeah. And then my last couple things are, there's a scene in here with Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. So we don't know if they just were like, hey, it's Steven Spielberg. Let him do what he wants. He can license anything he wants from Disney, yeah. Even though it's not a Disney movie, because they're usually protective about that stuff.
Yeah. I wonder if Snow White is different because it was made so much. It's like their first full feature. I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know. But Mogwai is a Chinese word for demon or devil. And then my last fun fact is that Warner
Brothers.
Did we
say what Mogwai was, though?
Yeah, it's the gremlin before okay. It turns into like a weird alien lizard right. thing.
That's the name of the.
Yeah.
The creature.
The creature. Mm. But Warner Brothers had a suit against Furby Toys because the Mogwai. Mm. And the Furby pretty much are identical.
Yes, they look very
similar. And they won. They won a seven-figure settlement. And they...
who sued who?
Warner Brothers.
Sued... Oh, because Furby came afterwards.
Yeah.
Trying to knock off...
Gremlins. Tiger Electronics basically tried to knock off the Furby. But, okay. Yeah. So that's it for our history and fun facts section for me. Do you have anything about the composer, Tim? I know you're super into music.
Well, I'm just like, I'm a huge fan of Joe Dante, one of his other films, The Burbs, which is also very kind of similar in a feel to this movie where it's not really horror. It's kind of like mysterious and there's like kind of.
That's horror comedy too, right?
I mean, I almost don't even call this. I mean, this is more horror in a sense, but there's creepy elements. It's like creepy right. at certain times and it's very whimsical. And he also got Jerry Goldsmith. Who, by the way, I thought, I was like, oh, yeah, Jerry Goldsmith, he's still alive. No, he's been dead for 20 years.
Okay, way to bring down the podcast, Tim.
But, like, you know, in my mind, I think 2004 was, like, last year. But,
right, yeah.
So, anyway, Jerry Goldsmith, very famous composer. He's done, you can look up the numerous things he's done, including
Star Trek.
He did, like, I think the Next Generation theme and a bunch of other famous movies. But his soundtrack is just classic him, classic Joe Dante and all, you know, this sort of movie. It fits perfectly with just how the movie feels, you know, like same thing in The Burbs. In the first scene of this movie, the main character is kind of like walking through the town and you get this kind of like fun, happy, like stroll music.
Yeah.
And but then at other times, it's kind of like he uses like, I don't know, the way he just themes things sounds kind of creepy, suspenseful. And
yeah, he had to record all the Mowgli singing.
But also in a fun, it's not totally creepy or like horror. There's like a fun element to the music, just like the film.
It does definitely add a lot of atmosphere to the film for sure.
It's actually a little loud. I don't know if that was just the TV we were watching, but I felt it was like overpowering the dialogue at some points. But yeah, I'm always a big fan of that. And I love those scenes where they're walking, you know, through the town, and it's like...
It's like everything's going well, and we know it's not going to be right, right for
exactly.
long. Yeah, exactly. So that's it for our history and fun facts section. We're going to take our break here, and instead of our little sting, we're going to play an ad from Wendy and Snapple.
And Snapple, if you're out there, we're looking for sponsors.
We definitely are. All right, so. Thanks, everybody. Hold on.
Today I got a letter from a retired colonel from Kentucky. Snapple is a super product, perhaps the only good that has ever come out of New York. Let's set him straight.
I'm Ed Koch. New York City is the place where the corned beef sandwich was invented and the first elevator that was installed. The first capital of the United States was in New York City. And it's true.
Snapple still is the best thing that ever came out of
you
New York.
You got it.
Snapple made from the best stuff on earth.
All right, we're back. My name is Megan.
And my name is Tim.
Not Steve, unfortunately.
Nope, not Steve.
Or fortunately, who's to say? Maybe we'll replace Steve very slowly.
No, there's no replacement.
No, there's not. So, Tim, we are talking about Gremlins today. Mm-hmm. Do you have memories of this movie?
No, not at all.
So,
yeah, to a certain extent, I do. Can I tell you my memory?
Yeah, go ahead. You go first.
So, like, first of all, the movie came out in 1984, so I was barely alive. But, you know, then it was replayed, obviously, on TV later and is a cult classic, so to speak. I remember kind of the kitchen scene a little bit, and my recollection of the film, which I did not remember at all, and I have not seen all the way through until we just watched it very recently, was that when they're exposed to water, I thought that was when they become gremlins.
Mm.
I got that mixed up. I did not remember that just multiplies them, but it's the whole eating thing that makes right. them into gremlins from the Mogwai.
Yeah.
So that I forgot. And then I did not remember like all these other elements of the movie and the sequences and stuff. I have like bits and pieces of memories. I remember them like eating or being in the kitchen, but that's kind of my memory.
Yeah, I full on don't think I've ever seen this entire film.
Yeah,
because
I don't know if I ever did see it all the way through. You always see like half of it on TV or something.
This is the thing. Steve and I have talked about this many times on this show. He's always like, how come you never saw this whole movie? And I'm like, we didn't have cable. Yeah. He had HBO growing up, and they would like make appointment. They'd be like, this movie's on at 6. Let's watch it. You and I came up with like no cable, and then it'd be like once we had cable, it'd be on TBS.
Yeah, that's a good point. We didn't even have cable in our house until like what, 1991 or so?
No, way later, like 94, like when I was in high school. Yeah,
I don't know if it was, but yeah, anyway, it was a little bit later.
Memories of this basically are our friend Dan loved Gremlins, and he and a bunch of other kids, like, who were about my age when we were in like kindergarten, first, second grade, especially I think when the second one came out, which I think was like 5 years later, merchandising was like everywhere.
Yeah. I kind of remember merchandising and like just seeing it in pop culture in general. But like, as for the actual movie, I mean, you're a little bit older than me, but we were still very young when it came out.
Yeah.
So,
and also, I don't think that they really had toys for this. I just remember, like, they would be, like, you know how Pepsi would have glass? Or Pepsi, like, Pizza Hut had the glasses that had, like, gremlins on them or something. And people had, like, gremlins pillows, gremlins stuffed animals, like, that kind of thing.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, and backpacks and stuff. It was, like, a lot.
They have toys or something, though, right? They would deal with...
Yeah, but
putting
I don't
in fast food. And everything.
Yeah, but I don't. I mean, like, not like Steve and I have talked about, like G.I. Joe or He-Man that you can see in our pop culture office right now. Like they weren't toys like that. But yeah, I think maybe little, like probably McDonald's. I'm guessing Happy Meals, maybe.
Hardee's, maybe.
Hardee's. Arby's.
I think it was Hardee's, actually.
Burger King. Yeah, so I just remember the merchandising, but I would not have been allowed to watch this when it first came out. And then I kind of...
Yeah, that's the other thing. I wasn't even allowed to watch Terminator 2, which I still hold a grudge on, but that's another story. That's on a whole other podcast.
I like that you, as the younger child, are like, I wasn't allowed to watch Terminator 2.
That was in 1992, so of course I'm not going to be able to watch Gremlins before
that. I wasn't allowed to watch Growing Pains. I'm not... That's not a joke, you guys. I was not... Our parents are lovely, but they did not allow me to watch Growing Pains or Wonder Years. And when you look back on them, you're like... Or Simpsons.
Wonder Year... No, we're getting a little off topic. I never felt comfortable watching Wonder Years.
Because it's like the 60s?
No, I just don't like anything that's too close to what feels like possibly my real life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I get it.
Like Boy Meets World.
Yeah.
Hated that show.
Yeah.
Because it was right around the time I'm the same age as, what's-his-face?
Corey.
And I could have been, you know, I could have been Corey. It's like, I don't want to come home from middle school and be watching my own life on TV.
You don't want to see another kid going through puberty while you're going through puberty.
Through it myself.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get into the full the full movie. Mm-hmm. The opening scene.
My goodness.
Let's talk about the racist.
There's so much to unpack in this movie. It's just unbelievable.
Tim, let's talk about the racist opening. I don't want to laugh about racism, Tim, but here I will because it is so incredibly racist.
It wasn't racist back in 84,
though. It was still racist back in 84.
It was probably inappropriate. First of all, I thought, so the, in the movie, there's, are we allowed?
Yeah, we're going to recap exactly. Okay. They can go watch it.
It's on. I don't want to, spoiler alerts, but.
For a movie that's 30 years old.
So the main character, the guy who, you know, his dad brings the Mogwai home for him after purchasing it. But his dad is, the whole thing is preposterous. The entire, of course, the whole plot is preposterous. His dad is this inventor that invents ridiculous things that nothing works. And the whole house is filled with crazy inventions. So but why is he,
wait.
So it starts out in a dark alley. And you picked up on this, but apparently, first of all, I totally misinterpreted the, now I realize, but the writing, I thought he was in Japan. I was like, why is he in Tokyo? Like,
yeah.
And it kind of looked like Japanese writing, but I guess he was, and then you were like, oh no, he's in
Chinatown. He's supposed to be in Chinatown,
City.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Because this, they live in like a suburb and he's supposed to be in Chinatown, maybe in New York City, but like.
He's a traveling salesman for his inventions that don't work.
Yeah, so I'll just describe first and then we can get into it. First, it's dark. He's in an alley and the dad has the voiceover, but it's a kid's movie and focuses mostly on Billy, this teenager, right? Yeah. So the dad is like, and I was in Chinatown. I'm an inventor. I was hitting the shops. And you're like, what? He goes down under like where the subway would be. Yeah. And there's an underground shop that, by the way, looks
it feels like you're in Kowloon Walled City in Hong Kong.
Yes.
That doesn't exist anymore. And this like creepy kind of crazy amalgam of
it looks like shops. The Sanderson sisters' house in Hocus Pocus. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's all this stuff is all over. And this guy with like a Fu Manchu beard comes and the dad tries to sell him the bathroom buddy.
We could honestly talk about the whole opening for a full hour. Yeah. You know, there's so much to talk about in the opening sequence.
Sometimes when this guy talks, his cymbals clangs. I don't even know.
I'm sorry, we have to focus a little bit on this. Why is the traveling salesman father trying to sell his crazy Swiss Army knife contraption to some random Chinese shop?
It's Christmas.
Doesn't make any sense.
He wants money for presents for his kid. But it's Christmas and he's just like trying to make money, but all of these are one-off inventions and they don't work. No. And it's like a Swiss Army knife, but it's got bathroom buddy. So it's got like a razor and a thing that squirts out.
It's very inconvenient.
It's just,
you can't keep it in your pocket. Really. It's very large.
So
also what he keeps talking to the nice Chinese gentleman in charge of the shop. The guy doesn't respond. I'm like, is he going to say anything?
Yeah.
He just keeps talking.
And then he hears the Mowgli singing in the back. Right. And he full on just walks to the back of the shop and starts ripping stuff apart.
Oh, let me just go in your back room and see what that noise is.
So the Chinese gentleman tells him, it's much responsibility. I cannot sell it. But the grandson has no compunction about selling it. It's $100. They need the money.
I don't think we said, but there's a grandson that leads the father into the store to begin with.
Yeah.
And then he's the one that, he won't sell it.
So in a voiceover, this time from the grandson, we hear about don't have any bright light. It could hurt it. And don't get it wet. And whatever you do, no matter how it begs or cries, don't feed it after midnight.
Yeah.
But there's no, like, they're just showing the dad going away, and there's also the guys.
It was very disjointed.
The nuns are on the rickshaw. Okay, that's the piece that got me. There's three nuns riding a rickshaw as this voiceover is going, and I'm like, what is this movie?
Well, the other weird thing, not to jump all the way to the end, but there's this like narration by the father in the beginning, telling, well, one time I was out here and got, and then at the very end, he also does a narration like, and that's the story, but there was no narrating throughout the entirety of the rest of the movie.
And he's barely in it.
Yeah.
He's away at conventions and stuff all the time.
It reminded me actually of The Office, the show, when they do that that fake movie.
Yeah.
And they give like the
Threat Level Midnight.
Yeah, Threat Level Midnight. They give the narration in the very beginning, and then he's like, well, that was the story, but there was nothing else. Yeah.
So then we cut, and we're in the suburbs, and this is where the Christmas music is playing, and then the opening theme that Tim
talked Jerry Goldsmith about. Music that kind of introduces you to the town and the whimsical nature of walking through the town.
And we get a very young Corey Feldman, who's in the beginning of this, and then we just don't see him, and he just goes away.
We see him at certain points.
At certain points.
Very young Corey Feldman. How old is he in this movie? Not very old.
I think probably 9 or 10. Yeah. It looks like it's before Stand By Me, even, and that was pretty early. Stand By Me, I think, was 85. So it's around that era. So we find out that Billy writes comics, but he also works at a bank with Phoebe Cates, who is wearing, and Tim goes, what is that dress?
Epic dress.
It's like Victorian and high collared and puff sleeves and bright blue.
Yeah. It would, you know, 1984, it looks great.
Yeah, I would have loved that dress in 1984. I would have wore the heck out of it. But Phoebe Cates is there, and then Mrs. Meagle, who's like the Wicked Witch of the West, and she's maybe married to the head banker or something. I thought it was
Deagle.
Maybe. Who cares?
Yeah, it is Deagle. Deagle.
Mrs. Deagle, and she screams at Billy about his dog.
Right.
Underneath, the dog's tied up on a rope, and she starts talking, like, in very dark terms about animal abuse and how she's gonna tie up this dog. She's gonna put it in the pound. She's gonna eat it. I'm like, what is wrong with
this? The acting in this scene is brilliant.
Is it?
It's ironic brilliant.
Oh, okay.
I don't like how Billy just sits there and takes it. He doesn't say anything. He's just like looking at her like in horror to a certain extent.
Yeah. So the dog Barney jumps up on her, and then, and this is not an important scene, but all of a sudden Judge Reinhold is there.
Oh, now it's very important.
And to which both Tim and I are like, my name is Judge.
Yeah. Arrested Development reference.
Yeah. He was also, was he with Phoebe Cates in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, right? I think that might be why he has the cameo here.
Crazy to say, but also a movie I've actually really never seen, to be honest.
Oh, man, you'll have to come back. Yeah. Except not. That movie is too awkward to watch with your brother. So then we see Billy's house, and as Tim said, this house is crazy. There is a remote to dim the lights, but it kind of doesn't work. There's a thing to crack eggs. It's like Doc Brown's house, but nothing works.
Yeah, it is kind of like Back to the Future, right?
Oh, it's except it doesn't work. But it's a nice house. I don't know how they're affording it. The dad isn't making any money. The mom stays home. Billy's just working at the bank trying to keep his family alive. She seems
awfully happy, though, to be with this guy.
Yeah, she does.
But he's creative, you know?
I guess.
He has the juicer. He created a juicer that doesn't work, really.
Yeah.
All of his invention, a fly swatter. He had the fly swatter that's kind of crazy. And
yeah. So then it's Christmas, apparently, because we picked a Christmas movie. And he gives Billy Gizmo. And then we have a sequence where they become best friends.
Right. The dad buys Gizmo from the, well, he the secretly buys the grandson sells it. Yeah.
And he gives it to Billy, and it's in a box, and he's like, don't shake it. Billy starts shaking the hell out of this box. Gizmo and Billy become best friends. I feel bad for Billy's dog, who gets ignored during this scene.
Yeah. Was it the same dog that plays Benji? Because it looked very similar.
I don't know.
The same time period. And we should have researched that.
Yeah, but we should have checked who the dog was.
It looked kind of similar.
And then Corey Feldman brings them their Christmas tree. And then they make their first mistake because the paintbrushes are next to Gizmo, and he knocks him over.
Corey Feldman does.
Corey Feldman knocks him over. Frickin' Corey Feldman.
Yeah.
Knocks him over, gets Gizmo wet, and then all of a sudden these balls of fur start flying out of him. They did this really cool with balloons, where they like blew up the balloons a little bit, and then and used that, and then that's how it multiplies, right? So now they're a little Mowgli all over the stuff, which the dog does not care for.
Right. But it's actually just kind of like that movie Multiplicity, where the offspring of Gizmo are kind of not so right in the head.
Yeah.
They're not like the same personality and not really.
Yeah, I thought of it kind of like the Tribbles on Star Trek. They like kept multiplying, or it's like, you know, it's like bunnies, but it's like this weird. And also, you guys, we never find out through this whole movie what Gizmo actually is. What is a Mogwai? Is it like an ancient creature? Is it some kind of, we don't know.
Well, I think the graphic novel actually goes a little bit into that, but that was after.
Listen, I'm not digging into the graphic novel version of this. So this is where we get Stripe. And Pete, who is played by Corey Feldman, goes, oh, can I have this one? It has a cool stripe on its head. And he puts out his finger and it bites him and probably gives him rabies. And in the next scene, the dog is hanging up in the Christmas lights and in peril. And then as Billy is like, oh, he might have frozen out there. So our next main character comes into the scene, and that's the science teacher. Right. Who you said is it? Was he in?
Yes, I couldn't place him at first, but he's the. I know him as Mayor Royce in The Wire.
In the
TV show The Wire from HBO. But he's a much, much younger version, obviously, 20 years earlier, you know. Kind of random, though. I like how Billy, he doesn't take him to some, like, special scientists. Like,
no.
You know who could figure this very interesting anthropologic question out? My 7th grade science teacher. And then the guy's, like, taking blood and stuff. Like, how does he know how to do this?
Yeah, because like, Billy, you would think, looking at Billy, that he's in high school, but he's not. Yeah, he works at the bank.
He's like, out of school?
Yeah, he's just out of school working at the bank. Okay. And that's why Judge Reinhold later on is you need to get your act together. Look at me.
He said he was like 23 or something.
But he looks like he's 16. Yeah. But at any rate, so he takes him to the science lab and he's like, watch this. And he puts more water on him.
Yeah.
And both Tim and I are like, why? Why would you do that? So now the science teacher has his own Mogwai to experiment on, apparently.
Right.
And keep in a cage.
That always goes well.
Yeah, that goes really well. So then we go to the bar where we have Judge Reinhold telling Billy to get a life and get his act together and quit drawing things.
And hitting on Phoebe Kate.
Also works at the bar, conveniently.
Right.
I'm guessing that she didn't have enough lines, and so they like put her in two jobs so she'd have a couple more scenes. That's my guess. But this older guy is drunk. And he's like, gotta watch out for those gremlins. And what's interesting is that is where they got the name. Gremlins were like a nickname for something in World War II. And Air Force pilots would be like, or the RAF, the Royal Air Force. They would be like, oh, something went wrong with the plane. Must have been a gremlin. Mm. But why is this guy randomly... he's not seen the Mogwai. He's not seen anything. There are no gremlins at this point.
That's part of the whole Joe Dante mystique, or whoever edits this. There's a lot of disjointedness to this, and unlike little, small, individual plots that have nothing to do with the rest of the movie.
In my notes...
Mrs. Deagle, nothing else to do with the movie.
But in my notes, I put, this is all over the place.
Yeah.
It's just like meandering. It's like heavy, heavy foreshadowing.
We ran into this
with Poltergeist, too. There's foreshadowing, but it's so heavy-handed. Like, give me.
I was wondering when the movie was going to really break out, and it really does in a big way later. But by the way, that guy that you were talking about, the guy who brings up the Gremlins issue, he's another actor that Joe Dante uses in The Burbs, along with Corey Feldman. So
yes,
he likes to use the same. Yeah, he was the garbage man in The Burbs. Yeah.
The kid who plays Billy has been in a number of B movies. And then Phoebe Cates withdrew from Hollywood for a while to be a stay-at-home mom. She's married to Kevin Kline, and she just wanted to raise kids. So it's kind of interesting, though.
She was married to him.
Yeah, she had a good career as well. Okay, so he's talking about World War II and the Gremlins. Then Phoebe Cates is like, I hate Christmas. It sucks. People get depressed during the holidays. And she starts talking about like people doing self-harm. Like it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And this is, we find out her story later. And listen, guys, we will get into that because that was the highlight of this movie for me.
Absolute the highlight.
So it's about 35 minutes in, and finally some stuff starts to happen because the Mogwais are going nuts. And they're like, beep, 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 beep. And they get Billy to give them chicken wings. Except they've chewed through his alarm clock and it's after midnight.
Yeah, they tricked him.
They tricked him.
And they're not supposed to have food after midnight. That's the third rule.
That's the third rule, and now it's been broken.
No light, no water, and no food after midnight. Right?
Yeah, that's, you know, like how you treat somebody in solitary. the one with Mr. Hansen takes his sandwich, so it must somehow psychically know that tonight's the night. So they, then we, Mr. Hansen is the science teacher and he's like, they're in the pupil stage, which is, I think it's the pupae stage, not the pupil. They kept, and they kept pronouncing it like pupil. Your pupil of your eye. Yeah. And I'm like, whatever. But anyway, it's all right.
he's only an elementary or middle school science teacher.
That's true. But they're PhD. In these, I really like this effect because they're in these like cocoon-like things. They do look like alien eggs that they're all in as they're becoming the gremlins. When they break out, they're in the box and they're like these gross, like scaly, big ears, long taloned hands. It was pretty cool. Yeah. I kind of liked the puppetry there and stuff. This, if you had done CGI, it would not have been as cool there.
No.
And it would have been very obviously CGI. Also, randomly, the dad's at an inventing convention for other crappy inventors where stuff is going wrong again. Yeah. So disjointed. For other
crappy inventors.
So.
Interesting thing.
Billy. Mr. Hansen calls Billy and he's like, it's hatching. Billy calls his mom and he's like, get out of the house.
Yeah.
His mom does not get out of the house. Yeah. She goes on a murder
page. She turns from June Cleaver into like
an actual Cleaver, like an axe murderer.
I like how she even talked to him yet. She like hears something.
She hears
and
something.
She's like, oh, and then she like grabs a knife. I don't know.
She talks.
Now I need to be a murderer.
She talks to him and then she hears something and then he calls her and says, get out of the house. Here's what she does. I want to say, too, at this point, all the gremlins are doing is eating food and breaking some plates, right? Yeah. They're not killing or hurting anybody.
Well, they did. Okay.
Not to her, though.
Not in her. And she knows that they're up to no good.
Here's what she does. One of them, she puts in a blender. One of them, she sprays with flea and tick and shoves it into the microwave until it explodes in the microwave. Another one, she stabs. I put in my notes, mom has got some aggression she needs to get out. Then she takes like a hatchet to a thing she thinks is in a stocking, but it's like a toy robot. But your son's 23 years old. Who is getting the toy robot? I don't know. Then there's Stripe is hiding in a tree in the Christmas tree and it attacks the mom.
Stripe is the leader of the gremlins.
And it attacks her, but to be fair, she's just murdered its whole family.
Right. Of course Stripe is getting mad. But he's not going to do anything about you killing all of his.
So he tries to strangle her, and then Billy takes a sword off the wall, but instead of killing
Billy,
it.
Billy finally shows up. It saves the day at the last second.
It's not Stripe because this one is flung into the fire.
Oh, okay.
Into the fire.
Stripe was hiding.
Yeah, Stripe escapes. Mm. But there's green blood everywhere. Mm. And he takes the mom to the two neighbors. And I kind of wanted to be like, you need your mom. She's way than you are. She could actually murder some of these things. But he takes her to the neighbors and he runs and tries to get. Oh, also Gizmo hid in the laundry chute. And that's how he escaped.
Yeah. Cute little Gizmo. Always makes it out.
And we have, I think, one of the coolest scenes in the movie is that Billy, you know that they can't be in water, right?
Yeah.
So he chases it to the YMCA where it jumps in the pool.
Yeah.
But we get this it's not like that hard to do with the facts. The water bubbles. It's like dry ice and lights, but it's really cool looking. Yeah. It's
Stripe was smart, though. He knew if I jump in this pool, I'm going to create like 1,000 gremlins.
Yeah. And Tim at one point looks at me and goes, how do they know about like American culture and things? Because at another point they're like Christmas caroling and like
that's what now we're jumping ahead. Poker. But the thing about the Gremlins that make them great is they don't they're not a traditional like horror vehicle. They don't, you know, they don't come back from the dead or something weird. They just cause absolute mayhem.
Yeah.
And that's what they're all about. Which, once the Gremlins were created, that's when the movie really starts to kick off. Because I was waiting for, I was like, how would this movie be so popular in 84? And then I see, you know, how fun the movie gets midway through. Really starts to get pretty wild. But
yeah, so the police don't believe Billy. I also have a note, this is just random. The wallpaper in this movie is astounding. Every house has, like, tons of floral wallpaper.
I didn't even notice
that. It just stuck out to me.
Yeah.
So it randomly, the Gremlins randomly kill this old couple. They drive a snowplow through the house, and the guy who had been talking about the Gremlins goes, the Gremlins are in my house! Yeah. And he just stands there and lets the snowplow hit him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Run away, buddy. You can run away from them.
Well, again, it's like different elements in this movie, and not to get too like philosophical, but the point again is it kind of pokes fun at horror movies to a certain extent and pokes fun at in fairy tale elements and just has a good, it's just kind of a funny time, but also has areas where it's kind of sinister and horror-ish.
Yeah, I think you're right, because right after we have like the trope of someone freezes and can't move.
Yeah.
Then we have a priest show up, except both you and I are like, is that supposed to be Albert Einstein? Because it looks...
The priest really looked like Albert Einstein.
And he encounters one near a mailbox. And then we have the Christmas carolers who finally take out Mrs. Deagle.
Yeah, Mrs. Deagle goes, what's that thing called? The lift.
Like yes.
It has a name to it.
And it is. It's a lift.
What's the name of it?
It's a chair lift that goes up your stairs. It's a stair lift, I think that's
it. Yeah, it has a name to it, though. Now I gotta know what it is. Yeah, Mrs. Deacon is riding her acorn stair lift down the stairs to go to the front door. And when she opens the door, the Gremlins are there giving her Christmas carols. Oh, my God. It was so good.
And the hunting, the dorky hunting hat, right? And earmuffs and stuff. And it's so, but she's about to throw water on them, which would have been bad.
Well, she didn't know.
But also, there's snow everywhere. You can't just roll around in the snow and get wet.
No, different form of water.
Listen, no.
Different form.
So, at any rate, a couple of them get into her house, and she goes, oh! And she goes to take the acorn back up the stairs. Yeah.
But the Gremlins disconnected the safety feature of the acorn, and it flies all the way up.
Like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And throws her out a glass window.
And she dies.
And she dies, but she flies out and her feet go up in the air. And it is a comical death. And you don't mind because she's a horrible person who was going to torture dogs.
Yeah.
It shoots her out the window, but they really... And then they take out a Santa Claus for no reason at all.
Well, my favorite thing about that is the two town police officers are driving by and they're like, oh, there's Ed. He always plays Santa every year. And then finally, even though they don't notice he's in clear distress,
they're
like, what are those things on him? And then they finally realize there's Gremlins covering his entire body. And then one guy's like, I want to go back to the station. They just leave him. I'm like, you're the police. These things, helping this guy.
These things can be killed. You could have shot them for sure.
Oh my gosh, man.
So then we get to the bar scene. All the Gremlins are spinning around the bar, eating popcorn, drinking, playing poker, and they have guns? Some of them?
Yeah, they do.
But also, what stood out to you in this scene, Tim?
Why is Phoebe Cates being forced to serve them alcohol? She's working at the bar and pouring them drinks. Like, why is she there? They forced her to stay and serve them as they terrorize the entire bar and town.
It makes no sense.
Except it makes every bit
of
sense.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, man.
And I don't know if that's the writer or the director who made that choice.
There's so much in this that feels more like Joe Dante than Chris Columbus. I don't know. It's just like the ridiculousness of everything.
Chris Columbus, I think of as more like gentle stuff. So it's surprising to me that his original script was darker. But he did like he directed the first Harry Potter.
Right.
And it has such a different tone.
Like, he's like kind of one of those Hollywood directors known for working with child actors.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. So then, okay, Kate flashes a camera at them. She escapes with Billy and Gizmo.
Mm-hmm.
And here, listen, we rate the movie 1 out of 10. I'm not going to say what my rating is, but this scene bumped it up by a whole point because
all of a sudden, in the midst of all the chaos, Kate starts to talk about her trauma and why she hates the Christmas season.
She tells this long story. Gizmo is watching her. Billy at first is like walking around the room making sure they're safe. Yeah.
She's telling the most intimate part of her life, and Billy's like half paying attention. She's like pouring her heart out to her love interest, Billy.
So she,
and he like could let not
and
care
she's
less.
Staring into space, just telling this story.
it's another non sequitur, really, in the film. Makes no sense and does not even need to be in the film, but it's just,
I'm going to try to tell this as much as I can without laughing through it, because she stares off into space and talks about how it was Christmas and my mom was there and we were waiting for my dad to come home. Now, your first thought is her dad went out for cigarettes and didn't come back. Right. Your second thought is maybe he did self-harm, because she was talking about that before.
Yeah, that would have been dark.
That would have been dark, but it was so much different from what happens. So her dad, they go to light the fire because it's cold and they smell something. Right. So they call the fire department. And the fire department comes, and instead of fighting a cat,
they pull out her dead father dressed in a Santa costume.
Which is horrible, but what she said.
With presents underneath his arm. And then what does she say to end the story, Megan?
She says, that's how I found out Santa was I'm going to have to record this again.
Yeah.
She goes, so that's how I found out Santa wasn't real.
that's the capstone of the story. Not that I lost my father.
So he finally pays attention for this last line, and she stares him into his eyes, and instead of saying, that's how I lost my father, that's why Christmas sucks, she says, that's how I found out Santa wasn't real. And I lost it, you guys.
That was great.
We had to pause the movie because we were laughing so hard. And I don't know if that was intended to be funny or not.
Oh, it definitely was. And that's how I found out Santa wasn't real.
Oh my gosh, so ridiculous. They see
best part of the movie, by the way.
It is the best climax
of the movie, really.
It really is. It kind of is, because it's the turning point. Most of the gremlins have gotten into the movie theater.
Yeah.
They're watching Snow White, and they love it.
They love Snow White. I can't get enough of this.
I have to bleep myself there, but that's okay. They can't get enough of Snow White. They're singing along with Hi Ho from Disney. Yeah. They're eating popcorn.
Well, that's the thing. It seems to be Mogwai. They pronounce that right?
Yeah, Mogwai.
Mogwai and gremlins in general, they seem to love music. They're very musical creatures. So
Billy and
eating all the food.
Yeah. Billy and Kate and Gizmo sneak into the boiler room. Stripe needs more food and goes across the street for candy.
Yeah.
They set off a gas leak, and he goes, don't breathe in the gas. What? Yeah. You can't not breathe in the gas when you set off the gas leak. And he sets a weird...
His fuse is like two paper towels. You're like, oh, we'll get away from this.
Yeah.
Like, in reality, if you set this off... It would blow. You would be dead instantly. The whole thing would explode.
Yeah, because you're also where the gas is, Billy.
Yes.
So they get out at any rate. It's all on fire.
Doesn't a gas leak need to be present for like hours too for it to go off?
Well,
eventually?
not if there's an open flame right
there. Yeah. Okay.
But it explodes twice in the theater, and I don't know how that happens, but it does.
Yeah.
So then we go,
they got most of the gremlins with that attack. They were able to blow up the theater.
Stripe
made it out. He was the candy store across the street.
And Kate goes, look, he's over there eating the candy. Mm. They go over, one of the windows in the store is broken. And Billy goes, let's go in. And he breaks the other window. Yeah. But the window's already broken. Again, is that intentional?
Does he break it with one of those toys that I used to use as a kid?
Yeah.
Like the fake lawnmower?
Like, it's like a vacuum cleaner. Why did they have little popcorn?
Yeah, why did they have that?
Because it's a department store. So it's like all
they were holding on to.
But he reaches in, grabs a toy out, and breaks the other window.
Yeah.
But you just reached into the window that was broken already. It doesn't make sense.
There's a lot that doesn't really.
At any rate, they chase him. There's a whole thing where they're chasing him through this store, right? And I also did love.
I feel like the end was more where it felt more like horror. Like they were trying to. They were doing a little play on horror movies and what it's like. And
but when he
Stripe starts attacking him with a. Chainsaw.
And he's defending himself with a metal baseball bat. Right. And then Stripe gets pulled off. And then he gets on a tricycle and rides away. And it's like, it's so weird.
What is he like again? Very good.
So he sees a fountain. Also, by the way, Kate is up in the lights, but she keeps just messing with the sound system. So she keeps turns on Christmas music. She turns on the announcements. It's not helpful.
Get it together, Kate.
Gizmo decides to help. And then, as Tim said, they have this big chase scene. Gizmo basically distracts him long enough for Billy to flip on this very bright light.
Was Gizmo even trying to help, or did he just inadvertently help?
Listen, I couldn't
figure that out.
Gizmo's
just riding a Barbie car through the department
store. But just as Stripe's back is starting to bubble and he's going to multiply again, Billy gets on the lights, and then who shows up? The inventor dad out of nowhere? How did he even know? And how did he know that they were in the store? We don't know.
Oh, man.
So they gave him, they give.
Maybe one of his inventions told him where they were.
Yeah, maybe. The gremlin skeleton, again, another horror nod, right? It comes up out of the water.
Yeah.
And then it tries to get them in the jugs, barks at it, and it dissolves into slime on the ground. The dad takes Gizmo back. Oh, also, in the midst of all of this, randomly, Billy and Kate made out.
Just a little bit.
That's right.
That's a kind of the typical opportune time. Tensions are high. You got to release a little tension.
Yeah. Yeah, just make out with somebody while something's chasing you. It's fine. So the Chinese man from the store shows back up at their house because this is all over the news.
Out of nowhere.
It's all over the news. Yeah. And somehow he knows where they live. Again, randomly. And he says, this is what you people do with all of nature's gifts. You do not understand. You are not ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then he takes this thing back and he talks to Gizmo.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says he wants to say goodbye to you. And it goes, bye, Billy. And it's so cute.
Very cute.
And that's And then in return, the dad gives him a smokeless ashtray.
It's over. Also, though, I love that the Chinese man knows what it is. He's like, yes, the smokeless ashtray. He's like, you know it? He's like, yes. The gas station attendant tried to sell it to me.
Right, because he sold one to the gas station attendant.
Oh my gosh, man. This movie, some of the offshoot random dialogue is just so good.
This movie is so random. I have a hard time giving it a rating. But how did people feel about it at the time? How is it rated on Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb?
So, yeah, it's a success. Rotten Tomatoes gives it a 78% audience score. And most critics had a meta score, I think, of 70. Surprisingly, most critics, gave it really good reviews.
That I do find surprising.
Yeah, including Siskel and Ebert, I was reading, gave it 3 to 3.5 stars. I think they appreciated the elements that I was talking about. Some of the critics said pretty much the same thing we were talking about the kind of the randomness and the lack of flow to the movie, but
they like the parody. And you said before it was $11 million budget. It did gross over $200 million worldwide.
Yeah, so worldwide it did better.
It made a big return. It also,
I guess, supposedly they did some vocals in different languages for certain certain markets too.
I wonder if they changed the name of it. So, and like, did they change the opening scene so it would be so racist?
I don't know. I'm still not convinced that he wasn't actually in China. So that's the part that I thought was ridiculous. I'm like, this man who can barely invent anything, he's trying to sell things in Hong Kong and also in this back alley. It's very random, but.
And it had, of course, Gremlins 2, The New Batch came out later. And then they had like a bunch of movies after this that were kind of inspired by it. Ghoulies, Hobgoblins, Munchies, Critters, Troll. Like
Critters sounds very familiar.
Yeah.
I think I've seen that.
Obviously, it didn't really win award. It got some, it won Best Horror Film for the Saturn Awards, which is for sci-fi.
Best Director, right? Joe Dante won. Then Corey Feldman won.
And best Music. Yeah, Corey Feldman was nominated for a Young Artist Award, which is nice.
The music's okay. I like, again, I'm biased because I love the cult movie The Burbs, and I love the soundtrack to that. But the soundtrack to this one was also pretty good.
Yeah.
Certain tracks, anyway.
So, out of 10.
Oh boy.
That's how the critics felt about it. How do you feel about it? I kind of, you can think of it like A through F too, like a report card. I kind of do that.
Well, judging it for like what it is and what it's meant to be going for.
Does it hold up? That's one of our questions.
You know, I actually, like, the more I think about it, I actually think it does a little bit. Because the thing is, what it's trying to accomplish and what he's trying to do in the movie, they accomplished their goal. Now, is it perfect? No, I think, but in a way, that's kind of what it was meant to be, you know, this kind of randomness. But the central part of the movie and the sequence, once the gremlins start existing and start wreaking havoc, then the movie got really amazing, in my opinion. It was so good after that. I mean, I enjoyed it anyway, but, and it is what it is, you know, it's not like going to win Academy Award for Best Picture, but it's meant to, you know, accomplish certain things. So anyway, I don't know, rating it wise.
Yeah.
Maybe give it a 7 out of 10. Probably.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to you. I think this is like a C minus for me. Mm-hmm. I think probably I'm going with like a 6. It was Poltergeist that Steve and I watched a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And, but it, like, we also watched Superman like about a month ago, and that movie is great.
I don't know if I agree with you about Poltergeist, but they're different movies, though. Poltergeist is more of a true horror.
Listen, Poltergeist was slow AF, and this wasn't. I mean, it was slow in some parts. It's like an hour 50. I think it could have been trimmed down a bit, especially the beginning pieces. Mm-hmm. Where you're like in the town getting to know Gizmo, but
yeah, there was a little too much ahead of it. I agree,
but you can see too, from a marketing standpoint, they wanted like to focus on Gizmo and stuff. Yeah. I don't see why parents complain about it, because to me, this is not as bad. Like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, that makes sense to complain about. I would still say,
I think the reason, again, that we can't understand looking back in time was, again, the way the film was marketed at the time.
Right.
I think that people apparently they didn't really show the gremlins in like the marketing material. So you didn't, and they marketed it just as, oh, it's a cute little animal.
So people go in thinking it's like E.T.
Yeah, exactly. And then then it wasn't really bad at all.
And then lady's being thrown out a window. And Santa's being attacked. Yeah. And Santa is being stuck in the chimney, apparently.
Again, I think that this guy and his movies, like, you either love them or you hate them. Kind of like a Wes Anderson. He definitely has his own style. And it's kind of more, again, I feel like it's very much feels like a cult classic in a sense. It's kind of like the more you watch it, the more you pick up on some of these ridiculous things that happen in the movie. And,
Yeah, I don't know that I'd watch this again, but I agree with you. So, six and a half pumpkins out of 10. That's not too bad. Usually our final segment is, what is Steve willing to watch? So today,
what am I willing to watch?
What is Tim willing to watch? Tim, we would like to have you back on the show.
Really? I'm no expert, as you could tell today. People are probably listening like, he doesn't know anything about film.
No, but the whole thing is like, this is about
just my opinion.
This is a movie that we never. Also, this is a movie we never got to see in the '80s, but it was in the background.
Yeah,
like it was in the culture. People talked about it, and
I mean, you kind of see it again. You saw it like here and there, but yeah.
So here are your choices, and we'll try to get Steve on board with the two of us. I don't know if that'll happen, but here are your choices.
Okay,
we can watch the original 3-hour BBC version of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Wow, that sounds spectacular.
We can watch The Burbs and have another Joe Dante.
Oh my gosh.
Or,
well, if you do that, then you have to have me on because I've seen the movie like 100 times.
All right, we'll have you back for The Burbs. I was going to give you also the option of Power Rangers.
Nah, Burbs is like my favorite movie ever.
All right. So. Tim is willing to watch The Burbs, and hopefully in a month or so, we'll be back with Tim for that movie.
But you should have Steve watch the full BBC version of Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe.
I'm trying.
It's pretty amazing.
It's just, it's very long, and me convincing him to do that is like...
I like it more than the Disney version, personally.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that'll be a good recommendation for him. That's it for us today. Next week coming up, or the week after, we're going to have Darkwing Duck. Thank you guys so much for listening. Have a happy Halloween. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And that's it. Have a great week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.